You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. INET is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. How many definitions of the word unlimited would you expect to find in the dictionary? Well, a quick search finds that unlimited, when used as an adjective, means not limited, unrestricted, unconfined, unlimited trade, boundless, infinite, vast, the unlimited skies, without any qualifications or exception, unconditional. The problem is that Australian telecommunications companies seem to think that when something is unlimited, then it has limits, something that flies in the face of every English dictionary known to mankind. The good news is that the ACCC, or the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, also has a problem with telcos redefining the English language. Last week, Optus and AAPT came under the watchful eye of the ACCC over their latest respective offerings in the broadband and telephony markets. By definition, unlimited means and implies that there are no restrictions. If consumers were to purchase a product or service which was unlimited, then one could safely assume that no restrictions apply. And you'd be pretty dark if you hit a limit whilst using a product or service, right? Another word which telcos pushed to the level of redefining recently was free, a word which implies no cost. According to Free TV Australia, the governing body responsible for approving commercials on free-to-air television, particular care must be exercised when describing goods and services as free. It's considered misleading or deceptive conduct under the Trade Practices Act 1974 to falsely advertise goods or services as free if the cost of those goods or services is recouped from the buyer in another way. When goods or services are available at no cost but subject to conditions, it is insufficient for the advertiser to advertise merely that conditions apply. The relevant conditions must be made clear to the viewer. For example, when a second good or service is made available free as a gift only, if a first good or service is purchased for a price, this must be stated. Price rises elsewhere or other conditions not clearly outlined, such as offering a mobile phone for free or $0, but placing the customer under contractual obligation of a minimum payment for a set term, will be misleading or deceptive conduct. So if this is the case for the word free in advertising, why should unlimited be any different? The ACCC has viewed Optus's $70 prepaid Turbo Max plan as deceptive and misleading, asking the questions, is 3,000 minutes unlimited? As a result, Optus gets to explain this new usage of the word unlimited to the federal court on June the 25th. Telstra also had problems in 2007 with an advertising claim that NextG was everywhere you needed it. They were told in no uncertain terms by Justice Gordon that you just can't say that, and the statement was misleading. So thanks to telcos in Australia, it seems that dictionary definitions need to be ratified by the federal court. If these companies insist on redefining dictionary definitions, what other antics are they up to that they apply this poetic license to? As consumers, be aware of the telco offers that seem to be too good to be true, because that they are.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Google are set to hand over Wi-Fi data. iiNet set to double ADSL2 speeds, but there's a hardware catch. Microsoft unveils game-changing Windows Phone 7. There's an open-source workaround for Flash on iPhones and iPads. And Zuckerberg tries to defend Facebook's privacy policy. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, a South Australian court allows legal documents to be served via Facebook. Airline staff are sacked in a computer pornography scandal. Telstra announces trials of its own naked DSL internet service. And producers of the Oscar-winning film The Hurt Locker turn their attention towards illegal file sharers. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A federal magistrate in Adelaide has allowed Facebook to be used to deliver legal documents to a respondent avoiding service in a child support case. The court ordered that the social networking site could be used to serve legal documents on an elusive father who moved address regularly and managed to avoid the best efforts of a process server. When His Honour Stuart Brown learned that the man was avoiding service and that he was also a prolific Facebook user, he ordered that the documents be served electronically by way of Facebook messaging. The magistrate described the case as unusual, but demonstrative of social movements and the currency of the times, and he said that the use of the social network for substituted service was valid. The magistrate said that he was satisfied the respondent had been properly served with the documents. The Age Tech reported that this was only the second time in Australia that legal documents have been served via the social network, after a Canberra law firm used Facebook in 2008 to serve notice of a judgment on two borrowers who had defaulted on a loan. Australian airline Virgin Blue has sacked up to 20 staff from Sydney and Brisbane airports after an internal investigation which found they had used the airline's computers to exchange pornographic material. According to Virgin Blue's public affairs manager, Ms. Danielle Keary, the staff in question had all been given at least one warning for breaching the company's code of conduct regarding inappropriate internet use. Ms. Chieri said that Virgin Blue has a very clear code of conduct for all staff that gives guidelines around computer usage and the appropriate use of the internet. The staff members were dismissed last week after apparently ignoring the earlier warning. According to the Sydney Morning Herald last week, the staff members involved were mainly baggage handlers who used work computers in offices and staff rooms. Telstra has confirmed that it is trialling naked DSL broadband to the consumer market by providing broadband internet on a standard telephone line without a conventional phone service. This announcement appears to break Telstra's long-standing policy against offering naked DSL directly to consumers. But Telstra spokesman Mr. Craig Middleton confirmed last week that a few thousand customers would be signed up to a trial in the next few weeks. The trial will reportedly last 4 to 6 weeks so that Telstra could assess customer demand for the product. Mr. Middleton said Telstra was trialling an enhanced version of Naked DSL, where customers have the convenience of being able to receive incoming calls and make outgoing emergency calls, a product which Telstra is calling Pure DSL. If the trial of Pure DSL is successful, participants will be offered a 24-month ADSL 2 Plus contract, costing $59.95 per month for 25 gigabytes worth of downloads. Speeds will reach a maximum of 20 megabits per second and will be slowed to 64 kilobits per second once the download quota has been reached. IT Wire technology journalist Mr. Stuart Corner was critical of the Telstra announcement, saying that ADSL 2 Plus technology was already well established and had been in use in the Australian network for several years, and that any kind of technology trial was unnecessary. Mr. Corner also criticised Telstra's announcement as the trial was not making ADSL 2 Plus technology available in any new location and was not offering any upgraded capability. And producers of the Oscar-winning film The Hurt Locker have filed lawsuits in the United States against alleged illegal file sharers of the movie. The production company, Voltage Pictures, has been working with internet service providers in the United States, and they have together identified 5,000 connections involved in distributing The Hurt Locker on peer-to-peer file-sharing networks. Voltage Pictures is now seeking the names of these users from the ISPs. The company, in a statement last week, said that internet piracy is directly contributing to a decline in the film industry, and that it is more important than ever for people to act responsibly in order to protect jobs and the industry's survival. The statement said that piracy hurts each and every hard-working person attempting to support his or her family through a career in the entertainment industry. Voltage Pictures has made $150 million US through film sales and acquisitions in the last 3 years. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
All those within the travelling tent united in the unfaltering belief that the good word from the Book of Steve and a generous cash donation can heal their broken lives.
Are you planning on buying an iPad?
My husband is.
That is sensational.
But now that you've all got iPads out there.
Not really a cut-down Mac.
Probably going, why
are
we...
How can there be two pictures on one screen? How does that work?
It has to, what's called, transcode the file.
Go away. We've got one here.
No comment. If you haven't got the glasses on, it makes you feel like you're drunk, but not in a good way.
Could stand correct on that.
For the hordes of orcs. Yeah.
It's all solid state. It's enormous.
Grab your finger, stick it out in front of you. I can see everyone doing it.
Oh, thanks very much. Same to you, buddy.
Exactly. We've also got over-under.
You were upsetting the staff there, though, weren't you?
Oh, I got my iPhone out and got jumped on by ninjas out of the room. No photos. So unfortunately.
You got jumped on by ninjas.
Yeah. Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and the mouses weren't stirring, except for Steve Jobs over there in San Francisco getting ready for WWDC. The Apple Worldwide Developers Conference coming up in a few hours' time.
We're about as far away from Christmas as you could possibly be at the moment.
Well, it's Christmas for the Apple people, isn't it, JD?
Well, it's one of the Christmases.
Isn't it?
There's a few a year, but...
There is. Rumours are...
Must be nice to live in that world.
Only if you've got lots of money.
Rumours are plenty. Free Mobile Me,
enhanced services through the, I think, was it Lala they purchased last year?
There's
some speculation that there's going to be enhanced cloud services. iPhone 4, maybe. Apple TV, Mark 4?
Mark 4, yes. Well, it's been out there. There's a lot of people have claimed to have a version of the new iPhone, so...
It's a version number. It's certainly not the speed that it's travelling at.
Maybe upgraded version of Safari is another one.
Oh, wow. Gee, it's all going to happen. Steve Jobs was quoted to say, "You won't be disappointed," two or three weeks back. Traditionally, he doesn't say that, so it will be very interesting to see what comes out of Cupertino this week. Mm. Will people of the likes of Adam Turner be happy? Anyway, we'll have to wait and see. His view from the couch this week is nothing to do with computers. He's back on his favourite bandwagon, the free-to-air TV station, so watch out if you work
back under the digital living room caper.
That's the one.
Good.
That's the one. Anyway... How are you, Dr. Ron? You've got lots of Cora over there, which we'll get into in a minute.
Got plenty, but I'm going well, thank you for asking. Trying to keep warm. Winter is definitely upon us now.
Oh, yes, it is. It is fresh here in the southern climes of Australia, where we're broadcasting from tonight. And Graham's in this evening, as per normal.
Yes, good evening.
Yes. And, lots to talk about tonight, I guess. Mm. So let's crack it open with the correspondence that needs to be tabled.
Absolutely. Come and join us in the chat if you're listening live, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Can join all of us there. Also, Lainey's evil twin, Jamie G, Marky Mark, Trent, GD is moderator tonight.
Who's Lainey's evil twin?
Warlock. I don't know. Maybe you should ask them. If you're not listening live, then you can go to our forum, which is at forum.techtalkradio.
Hello to any Wii Warriors taking us live in central New South Wales this evening.
.com.au. E-readers. Talking about e-readers on the forum, Musketeer says, in the past couple of weeks, I've noticed a few people on Sydney buses and ferries... with e-readers. No, they weren't iPads. It got me thinking that I might want to consider one of these.
Well, were they those other funny things that come out of
what's
Amazon?
There's a Kindle.
There's a few of them. Musketeer says, I reckon I would read a lot more if it were more convenient. Anyone here use an e-reader before or have any recommendations?
I would love to try one.
I would too. I'd be using it solely for reading books, so I don't really care about other features. Prolonged reading off an LCD is terrible, so I'm really only interested in the e-ink type devices that mimic the look of paper and have extremely long battery life.
The Kindle is one of those.
Adam Turner likes the Kindle. Adam also referred last week to the new Kobo e-reader from Borders, and that's another one which he likes very much.
I've used the Kindle. Martin, who's Lyd's husband in the States, he has one, and it's nice. It's nice. It doesn't have the fancies that you'd sort of come to love and adore with other devices, but it's a...
Like colour.
Yeah, like colour, like a backlit. But then again, as they said, paper is not backlit, so it's not an LCD screen
That's the big advantage of it. That's not a disadvantage. That's
correct.
The big selling point.
And the other benefit of that is battery life is quite good on the Kindle. So
now, when was the last time you were reading a novel on the tram and it had colour pictures in it?
Let's take a step back from that. When was the last time I was on a tram? For Melbourne people, you know what we're talking about. For others, we have trams in this state.
And they're probably the safest form of transport.
Like a very small train that runs down the middle of the road.
That's right. They've got them in San Francisco. They're called cable cars over there.
Yes.
Yeah. They've actually got them in Adelaide too. Did you know?
Musketeer, have a look at KoboReader.com if you're wanting to have a look at that product there. That's okay. I'll keep you back on the tram tracks. So that's our recommendations. But have a look at the Kindle, and there's lots of others out there as well. From GD, you can say hello to GD tonight in the chat room. Guys, sorry for the long delay in replying. There's a thread on the forum at the moment about any recommendations for an ISP. And everybody put in their 0.02 euros worth. He says, thanks for all your suggestions. I put them to my neighbour, and after much long discussion, ended up going with 3 prepaid wireless, $149 for 12 months at 12 gigabytes a month. I can just hear you all groaning, but hear me out, says GD. We don't have to buy a router. And he's
a man who buys Optus.
And he's very happy with the setup. To be honest, I was sceptical about obtaining adequate wireless reception bandwidth inside the house, but after I configured it, the speed was okay for downloading, email and web surfing. And he, his neighbour, was able to log on quite quickly. I didn't have time to do a speed test, but we'll try one this week. Reception appears to be reliable. After a few weeks' use, I can confidently say that I have a very happy neighbour. So that's
well
good
done,
news
GD.
From GD.
I'm using that service this evening due
Are you
to technical limitations.
The 3 service.
Yeah, tethered through my iPhone.
There you go, GD. So that's what Andrew's doing in the studio as we speak. Longtime friend of TikTok Radio, Jeff Gates, via email says, I'm glad you guys are finally talking about T-versity and the PS3.
Yeah.
We gave this a good
play.
Yeah, good go last week, didn't we? Maybe you should listen to my report from a year or two ago. Yeah, Jeff's been doing this for a long time. Air Video is the best.
I know, I run that too.
Andrew is on the bandwagon.
I've got that. Air Video is fantastic.
I have my... How do you pronounce this manufacturer's name, Andrew? Is it Haupauge card? HAUPPAUGE.
Yeah, yes. What he said.
Okay. He has his capture card. It shows and Air Video takes care of the rest. Oh, there you go. So he uses it in conjunction with Air Video. And his email says, sent from my iPad. Jeff's got a new iPad.
He has. Now, just before you move on, we should explain a few of those things. T-versity is a program. It's a server, actually. And it's used on devices such as the PS3 to actually stream any type of media. Well, I'll clarify myself, not any type, but most types of media from your PC or Mac to your PS3.
So you install this on your computer, on your PC.
Yep.
And it sends the... You've got videos on your PC or on your network.
Yep.
And it streams them across to the PlayStation 3 and then puts them on your big plasma screen.
It does indeed. It does indeed. Now, it's a very simple installation. You just download the software, which I think is free of charge. In Australia, it's good. You only need the free version because if you buy the paid version, it gives you access to things you can't access.
Right.
Because it's a US-based type technology. Whereas over here, if you just wanted to stream material from your PC or your Mac to your big screen via your PlayStation, it's perfect for that. You just run it up. Open it up and say, here's the folder where all my movies are or all my stuff is, and go to your PlayStation, and sure enough, you'll find them all there.
So your PlayStation 3 becomes a sort of a fancy adapter with a network port that converts a network port into an HDMI port.
Yeah. Yeah. It means you can watch telly from your PC videos on the screen.
On the big screen, which is something that you miss a lot of the time.
It's very handy. And if you're one of the big manufacturers, well, it doesn't take much to work out. You actually get a free PS3 when you buy one of their tellies at the moment too. So they'll have them all running out the doors. The other thing which you spoke about there, Dr. Ron, too, was Air Video. It's traditionally a Mac application. If you have an iPad or you have an iPhone, this is a great way of getting material to your device without the need of conversion. Once again, similar sort of thing to T-versity. You run it up on your machine, your PC or your Mac, and you point to the folder where all the good movies or whatever it is that you want to share load it up on your iPhone or your iPad, and guess what? It's really good quality stuff straight to the machine. So you don't have to convert. It does it in real time and converts it for you and streams it straight to your device. Really good for the kids wanting to watch stuff which you haven't got a DVD in or anything like that. They want to sit in their sick bed watching movies off the server. Very handy.
Very nifty.
Okay, there you go. That's what Air Video is. Highly recommended. About $4, I think, on the App Store.
Well, speaking about the PlayStation PS3, the Governor via our website feedback form says, hi, guys. Enjoy your show. I bought a PS3 2.5 years ago, principally as a Blu-ray with the games as an added bonus. And Graham's commented before that the PS3 is a very, very good Blu-ray player disguised cleverly
as a games console.
Sony's continued support through firmware updates ensures the device runs all the latest discs perfectly and essentially appreciates in value as time goes on. I now have a QNAP, Home NAS, which is a network-attached storage device, which acts as both a BitTorrent client and a DLNA media server. Adam's spoken about DLNA before. Mm. That's the standard.
Digital Living Network Alliance. It's a Sony. It's a major manufacturer type sort of thing pushed by Sony. It means that all your devices talk on the network together.
So when you turn on your Blu-ray player, your TV switches over to your Blu-ray automatically sort of thing.
Does it with my PlayStation
that sort of
too.
Stuff. Yeah.
When you turn the and it comes on the right
so
channel.
So what this guy's got
it's
is...
It's good for those that don't know how to use remotes.
The NAS device, that's just a... big old hard disk with a network socket on it, plugged into his network.
Yes, the QNAP Home NAS.
You've got to store your movie somewhere.
A big box to put files on.
Yep. Yeah.
And what else has he done?
He's got the PS3.
Which connects his network to his plasma screen.
Yes, and he's also got a BitTorrent client on that QNAP NAS.
On the, okay.
NAS what do you use that for, Graham?
BitTorrent is for downloading things over the internet.
Yes.
Sometimes less like Linux, legitimately
what do you
than
call
other.
Them? Linux install packages?
Yeah, Linux
ISOs
or whatever. Yeah, or possibly.
Don't know how you watch them on your plasma, though.
No, well, they're less entertaining than
some
other things.
For retrieving your backups.
Don't download BitLocker.
Hurt Locker.
Hang on, sorry, that's a Microsoft encryption thing. Sorry.
Don't download that either. The PS3 is the head that streams content from the NAS to our 50-inch plasma.
Yes.
Via HDMI. Since I upgraded the home network from wireless to gigabit Ethernet over Cat 5e cable, the reliability is now great and HD content is not a problem.
Well, you couldn't do it over wireless.
No, don't try and do it over wireless.
Not the high-def stuff, especially. With two kids, yep. I rarely play games, but that in no way diminishes the device's value in our home. I've owned LG and Panasonic PVRs in the past. The LG died after 13 months, and the Panasonic has some minor glitches in its operational software that are annoying. Do you think Panasonic have released patches? Of course not. They advised me to upgrade by buying a new device. Panasonic, I've got news for you, and it's not good. Cheers from the governor. So that was good.
There you go. Now, he makes another really good point there. Wireless is great. I love wireless networks. You can move about. You don't have to be tied down to a single spot. But they're not the be-all and end-all of networking. When you want a good connection, nothing beats running a cable. Wireless, yep, works great, but it's not bulletproof like a cable is. So with all these things, even if you're just streaming video to your TV... it's really worth running network cables.
And my understanding is that the new Blu-ray standard requires manufacturers to include a Cat5 port.
Mm. Which is a network socket, yeah.
Mm, on the back of the device.
What a good idea. Mm. Common sense prevailing at last.
Last but not least, Matthew Robinson, our European correspondent, via email says, Ron...
Which part of the world is he in at the moment?
He's in Denmark.
He's back home again, is he?
He says 4G LTE, long-term evolution...
Hang on.
...is coming here. The licenses were just given out. Three will offer this under its 3G network, 42 megabits per second by the end of this year, and then early next year, 84 megabits per second.
You won't find it 4G. I think that's wrong.
He means LTE, I think.
Yes, which is 3G,
on the
not 3G.
3G. Yeah.
4G is not LTE. I might stand corrected, but I don't think it is.
I think you're right, Andrew. I think it might be the product type thing that they're calling it over there. I don't know.
Yeah, you'll find it LTE, long-term evolution. Telstra have turned it on here already.
Oh, look, it actually clarifies. It makes a bit more sense as we keep reading. There, it says then using...
Really? That's unusual for Matthew.
Yeah, well...
it only gets worse, doesn't it?
That's harsh.
Sorry, Matthew.
4G, it says 4G LTE is coming here. So I think he means both, because then he says... Then, using 4G technology, it will go to 150 megabits per second.
That's better.
That's what we need to hear. And then he says, what do you get again? Question mark? Yeah, thanks, Matthew.
48 meg LTE is the best we can do in this country. Thanks to Telstra, they're doing a mighty fine job doing that.
There you go. So he's going to get 84 with LTE, and he's going to get 150 on 4G. He says also the mini SIMs, what we call the micro SIMs, are coming this month.
Oh,
so it's an update from Matthew for their iPads and such devices.
Yeah, now, the 4G will happen here. The spectrum auctions have to take place very first. I think he was saying in there that they've already happened.
It just happened in Denmark.
Yeah, we've got 4G auctions coming up fairly shortly in Australia, and then obviously...
As soon as we get those pesky television stations off the band.
Oh, pesky TV stations. Just roll out BitTorrent for everyone. We don't need TV stations, will we?
But you will need a lot of bandwidth.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, Channel 9, that's the end of the road for you.
That's all the correspondence, Andrew. Thank
well
you
done.
Feedback at TechTalk. techtalkradio.com.au is the address.
Yes, or you can come and have a long chat to us now on chat.techtalkradio.com.au, wherever you may be listening to us from. All right, a couple of other interesting things during the course of the week. I had the displeasurable experience of having my broadband capped during the course of the week.
Oops.
I managed to churn through 120 gigabytes of data.
Well, Graham did this last week, I seem to recall.
Yes.
Fortunately, mine was on the last day of my cycle, so I only had to deal with it for a day, but it was a day that I had to send emails to people like Dr. Ron.
It's a lot of Linux ISOs you're downloading there.
A lot of it's actually off-site server backups that I do between the office and home because it's a damn sight cheaper to back stuff up remotely.
Until you run out of bandwidth.
Until you run out of bandwidth. So obviously we're fairly prolific that month during work and along with all the other bits and pieces that goes on. But it's not a nice feeling. But the reason why
it's
I'm talking
very
about
frustrating.
It, the reason why I'm talking about it is there is an upside with the ISP that I use. All their free associated products that they have, like iView is unmetered, remained at full speed.
Ah, yes.
Now, that meant that I could still go in and use the PlayStation 3, cursor down to TV, go into iView and watch anything I wanted straight off the ABC up onto the big screen, which was really handy. And it didn't affect the VoIP at all either. So there you go. There was a little bit of capped
feedback.
That's
good that they're doing their capping in a sensible and restrained manner.
Yeah, so not effectively just slabbing it.
So effectively the cap is from outside the network in, not from within the network, because presumably they've got proxies and other things to store the iView caches, you would think.
You would think. That's speculative. Mm. So people in our chat that might be have a bit more know
more
about
likely
that.
They've got special links through Pipe or one of those interconnect people. And
cost
them
less. And,
so they don't cap those necessarily.
But the moment you went to send an email with a 3 megabyte attachment, you're in pain.
It was. Fortunately, it was only one day, and I had to go out anyway, so it wasn't too bad. But
well, mine was a lot worse than that. I did mine on the 14th day of my month.
Are you out of it yet or not? What happened? Because you're going to upgrade your plan to try and roll out of it. Did that work?
That absolutely worked. I left it several days. I left it several days because I didn't want my plan to roll because it changes the anniversary date of my plan again. So
there you go, people. If you want to try and get out of a cap,
I didn't want my plan to roll over, so my anniversary date was the start of the month because I wanted it to be a week in, so I got time for my pay to go in and all that sort of stuff before they start taking money out again. And what I found was I could get a much better deal, a much more sensible, a lot more download allowance in peak times in exchange for slightly less download allowance in off peak time, which I could never make use of anyway. And that's $20 a month cheaper.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they don't voluntarily call you up and
they don't say we've changed all our plans and you can now get all you used to get and get $20 cheaper. So it was really good getting shaped and getting forced to look at the new plans because wow, it's much better these days than it was when I signed up.
We're in the throes.
So there's a lesson for everybody. Go and have a look at your ISP. If you've been a customer for more than a year, go and have a look at what the plans are now compared to what they were when you signed up, and you might be able to get a much better deal.
Our office is in the throes of moving fairly shortly, and I'm in.
You're moving again?
Well, it's been 3 years. Thank you very much. What do you mean again? I'd rather not.
You move office every 5 minutes.
Every 3 years, if you don't mind. Gee whiz, time flies when you're having fun, huh?
Seems like 5 minutes.
It does, doesn't it? Well, anyway, the point of the matter is, I did just exactly that. What you were saying, Graham.
Yeah.
And I found that by shopping around and looking in other places, you go, oh, the same data, the non-shaped uploads, things like that, a little bit less. Over the course of a contract period, which is what you traditionally do in a business because you're there for a while, it works out to be considerably cheaper.
That's right.
Just by looking around going, oh, so I'm going to ring the company that I'm with at the moment, excuse me, and say, look here.
And I see what they say. This. Yeah.
I said, go to their website, click here and look at that. And that's what I'm about to go to, unless you want to give me something that matches.
That'll be interesting to see if they come to the party.
Now, ISPs, like other commercial vendors, where you can go in and say, hey, look, I can get it for this price around the corner. What deal can you do for me? Will they do that?
Don't know.
You'll find out.
Haggle is the word.
Mm.
You won't haggle.
It's always worth a try.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's like when you go to white goods manufacturers and, Billy Blogs up the road can do this and the other guy down the road can do that. It works all the time. Even in game shops, I went to a shop recently where I needed to buy one of those vibrating console things for the PS3.
You don't play games. What were you using that for?
Well, you need two for some games, and I have children, Dr. Ryan.
So they are playing games now, are they?
They are. Right. And to my wife's disgust, that some of the games they're having a lot of fun with, actually. One in particular, it's the guitar one, the Guitar Hero thing.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun for the family. We try and get the ones where they jump and dance and move around rather than sit there and exercise their thumbs. But anyway, my point of my story is downstairs at one of the game houses, I said, well, upstairs at one of the yellow places, they've got them for $10 cheaper. Oh, okay, we'll do that. So you just got to ask.
Yep.
If you don't ask, you won't receive. Only a couple of organisations you wouldn't do that with. One's Telstra. Probably a few.
Well, again, probably worth asking, but yes, they often don't move.
They traditionally, Telstra moves when you say, I'm cancelling my account when it's all too late, because you've already created a new account with a new supplier. Oh, we can do better than that. Well, you should have done so, you know, 2 days ago. So, anyway. Now, speaking of telephone companies, the word that I spoke about in the opening of the show today, unlimited. What do you reckon that means?
Well, it depends in what context. In the context of normal English or the context of ISPs or telcos?
English language that we all use.
As much as you would like, is what I would think.
Without limit.
Without limit. There is no limit.
So if I came up to you, Dr. Ron or JD or anyone, and said, I'm going to give you access to this, it's unlimited, would you expect there to be a limit?
Use it any time of the day or night?
No qualms about how much, when, how little, anything like that you might happen to use?
Sounds great.
Does, doesn't it? Well, anyway, the telcos, two that have really got the eye of the ACCC at the moment is Optus, obviously. They're very much, they like doing this sort of stuff. Telstra's done it in the past too. They've said things which is not quite true. And AAPT is another company that sort of says things are unlimited. Now, what Optus have got done is they've got a new package called a $70 prepaid turbo mobile plan. And the ACCC has basically come out and said, hang on a minute, guys, this is deceptive and misleading. As a result, they've taken them to the federal court to say, please answer some of our concerns. One of the concerns, or the major concern, is that 3,000 minutes is a limit.
It's not limit. It's a limit, isn't it?
Well, that's what I would have thought, and I hope that the federal court also decide that the fact that that's a limit. You can't use the word unlimited. Now, the word free.
It depends on the wording, though. If they say unlimited calls.
Yes, it does, and I thought about that.
So you can make as many calls as you like.
Well, you still can't if you do it mathematically, but yes. you can make what, you know, well, let's pick a random
number. So there's no limit on the number of calls.
You can make 5,000.
There's only a limit on the number of minutes.
That's right.
What they should say. They should say 3,000 minutes per month.
Unlimited calls in that time.
Yes,
if you use unlimited without any qualifications, then you're in real trouble, because if you have an unlimited broadband plan, you might say, well, I want unlimited speed as well as unlimited downloads and unlimited everything else.
You need to clarify.
You've got to qualify what is unlimited.
Yep.
And I think that's what they're going to try and do, get some form of clarification over that. But nonetheless, most consumers, and this is where the ACCC come into bat, they're batting for us, are going to basically say to those telecommunications companies, well, you can't say unlimited. It's like when they came out recently and said, oh, you get a free mobile phone with your plan. Well, hang on a minute. You don't get a free mobile phone.
No, you pay for it.
The cost is recouped within...
No upfront fee, perhaps.
Well, that's why it now says $0. You know, no upfront fees and stuff like that, because the powers that be said, no, that's misleading and deceptive. So
I have to say, the telecommunications industry isn't the only industry that deals in this sort of... behavior. I was looking at a device on the weekend, and it was one of these digital set-top boxes that has a hard disk in it, has a DVD writer in it, so it can store your programs on hard disk, it can write them to DVD, do all this stuff. And it's from a major home electronics goods brand, and I won't name the particular one because they all do it, or a lot of them do it. And it had in big letters on the side of the box, 1080p full HD, and in tiny little letters underneath it said upscaling.
Oh.
And the receiver in this device is a standard definition receiver. It won't even receive the HD channels and upscale them.
Well, you'd be severely disappointed and fairly savage if you got that home expecting to watch...
So, full HD, 1080p, in huge letters, tiny little letters, upscaling. And it's a standard definition device.
Well, that's for the receiver.
Because it's got an HDMI port on it that can output. So everything's so standard definition. But
so if you put a Blu-ray or a DVD disc in
it. No, it won't play Blu-ray discs. Ah. Only play DVD discs, which are inherently standard definition.
Yes. Well, they are.
Yeah.
Can't be anything but.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing, the same device had a big promotional thing on the box, record one program while watching another.
Oh, yes. Adam's had a go at this.
Oh, good. So it had dual tuners.
No, it had one tuner in it.
It was like...
And the instruction book says, pick the channel you want to record, press the record button, then pick up your remote control of your TV and change the channel.
Well, I haven't got a plug into a TV. It's plugged into a digital monitor. I haven't got a tuner in my digital monitor.
Well, then you're stuck.
Well, that's not very good, is it?
It's exactly right. It's like saying my old VHS player can play Blu-ray discs if you connect a Blu-ray player to it.
That's exactly what they're saying. It's exactly what they're saying. And who is the manufacturer? You're not going to say.
Won't take much to guess. You don't have to name names, Graham. Only a few.
No. Life's good.
Which bank?
Yes.
Anyway, so it's consumers have to be, I think, a little bit on their guard. If you go along and see that, like, from my understanding, there's no any laws in place to stop people doing unscrupulous things on the side of a box. But there certainly is when it comes to advertising product and goods and services for sale to the consumer. Another interesting thing which I noticed during the course of the week too, I came across a company selling electronic goods and services. Promoting a price which excluded sales tax, or GST in this country, which is a very big no-no. The ACCC are now aware of that company. They got a good system on their site to go and do that. I logged up and I said, oh, yeah, I'm looking at that. And I thought, it said, $2,000 plus GST. I said, you can't say that. It's not allowed. It's illegal in this country. Everything must have sales tax inclusive in it. So,
what was the ACCC's response?
Haven't got one yet. Haven't got one.
When did you send the inquiry to them?
Just after my broadband became usable again on Sunday, I think it was.
Now, before we go off the subject of unlimited plans, I believe an American telco, I think it was AT&T, have had to drop all of their unlimited plans because iPhone and iPad users sort of got a bit carried away.
How many apps can you download on one of those things?
Yeah.
So, well, the thing is, for the first time, it's practical to use as an internet platform.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas, mobile users in the past have been stuck on these, tiny little screens with slow little browsers in them.
So people that were lucky enough to get in quick have still got their contracts, but no new contracts as a result.
Well, it stands to reason, too. I think also in the US, when I was there, you'll find that there are no limits. They don't promote them as unlimited, I don't think, but there are no limits. It's a speed-related issue, what you pay for.
Yeah, but they're moving away from that now, and they're starting to limit things.
Well, I guess it's a bit like... I don't think they do have issues with their broadband over there. So I think the president has mentioned stuff too in some of his political speeches. I could be wrong, but I think I recall hearing things like that when I was there.
Do you remember some feedback we had last week or the week before where somebody said that Optus changed their 7 gigabyte account to 5 gigabytes without notifying anybody?
Yeah.
Marky Mark in our chat room says that this just happened to him, and he got a bill for going 2 gig over his new downgraded 5 gig cap.
Thinking that he had 7 gigs to use.
Yeah, yeah. They wanted...
That didn't shape, Marky Mark?
Optus wanted him to pay $350 plus for going over.
He told them where to put their invoice.
Marky Mark did tell them where to put their invoice and also told the TIO, and which is the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman.
She's great.
And the Optus ended up apologising. What a scam, says Marky Mark.
And this is... I might preach a little bit here, but this is where if you don't contest these guys, they get away with blue murder. They really do. It's like what I think we've spoken about Telstra in the course of the time too. If you've got an issue, the first thing they'll say, we'll meet you halfway. No. Hang on a minute. No, we're not meeting any halfway. No. You were at fault.
You can't steal my wallet and then offer to give me half the money back expect me to be happy.
Correct.
That's not the way it works. Marky Mark, you're talking about ADSL, you're talking about broadband at home?
We'll find out in the next few minutes. He'll reply in the chat room
on the chat room. If he is, then seriously, have a look at some of the other providers other than Optus. You'll get a much better deal somewhere else.
They're an oversold network anyway. Mm. Whilst we're talking about internet, iiNet is looking to upgrade DSL2 technology, which I thought was quite cute during the course of the week. And what they're doing is promising to do double ADSL2 speeds to 42.
Double speed. So instead of getting whatever percentage of 24 megabits per second, you get whatever percentage of 48 megabits per second.
Yeah, yeah. The trick is you need two modems and
two phone lines. More to the point.
Yeah.
I think you probably need one modem but two phone lines because the modem needs to balance.
Maybe maybe it's yes, maybe you're right.
We've played with this before, Graham.
Yes.
I seem to recall.
Yes. I'm presuming they've got their load balancing a bit better sorted out than we did. Mm.
Anyway, it's based on new technology called bonded ADSL, which iNet call center staff told one of the publications recently the trials have produced speeds of up to 40 megabits per second, double that of the available existing ADSL 2 Plus services. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting technology. If you need that speed both up and down, maybe an option. And don't forget, Telstra also launched a synchronous 10 megabit service recently too. I don't know anyone who's used that.
Yeah.
That could be pricey if I know what they're like. I haven't looked into it yet, but well, we're getting some VDSL offerings.
I did have a look at the pricing on that Ethernet service. And depending on the speed, you know, if you were happy to put up with the speed being not the full speed of the Ethernet, or if you're happy to put up with a certain download limit, the prices were not that bad. It was only if you wanted sort of everything and everything that the price became a little bit on the steep side. But even so, if you're a business that relies on that sort of stuff, it would still be quite reasonable, I think.
Mm. Yeah, indeed. All right, so there you go, a bit of news on the broadband side of stuff. I think also Tassie, I think I heard Conroy on the radio here this morning saying that within a month, Tassie's going to come online with the NBN. The first customers will be able to utilise that new bit of fibre that they've been rolling out there. That's a bit of a landmark. Should we talk about politics for a moment, or should we just move on?
Keep going. Nothing to say. Wise idea.
We can talk about politics for a little bit, if you like. We've been saying now for months and months that the federal government's got a lot of work to do, but did you see the recent opinion poll? Did it come out today or Friday? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, there was one come out very recently, yes.
Yes, which...
I've always been of the opinion that governments lose elections and this is just, you know, adding fire to the the fact that this is what's going to happen.
Well, Kevin Rudd, who's our Prime Minister, said that, look, if there was an election held tomorrow, he would not be the Prime Minister anymore.
How did he say that? Was he up on the pulpit doing another sermon?
No, he was being interviewed on government radio.
So he was?
Yeah, on the sermon.
On the pulpit.
Presumably the next line was, so I'm going to lift my game and fix this and fix that.
He said, yes, he said he's got a lot of work to do and they are going to do a lot of work before the election.
Well, I don't think houses burn down from broadband connection, so we should be okay.
Yeah, but yes, there might be a few things set on fire if the Great Firewall... policy gets up. I mean, this is the big problem at the moment. You cannot vote for the current government because of their policy on this firewall, the
net filter.
The net filter issue. And it's a deal breaker. It's just so stupid that you just can't... You couldn't possibly support it. On the other hand, the current government is going to build a national broadband network, which the opposition is not. They're going to scrap the national broadband network. Now, the national broadband network is essential for the future of Australia. So you have to vote Labor to get the broadband network.
Damned if you do, and you can't vote Labor because
of the net filter.
The other thing is that the opposition has got no credible alternative for anything. All they're saying is that we're going to scrap the national broadband network. And that's it.
And we don't know what we're going to do with a net filter.
No, don't know what we're going to do with a net filter. If they've been asked about IT type initiatives, they say, "Oh, we'll tell you a little bit more about that closer to the time," which is ridiculous. Yep. Kevin Rudd said, "Quote: If these polls were reflected on election day, Mr. Abbott would become the Prime Minister." So, yes, and there's a photo of him there on the Radio Australia news website scratching his head.
I wonder, looking a bit concerned. Yes, well, I'm scratching my head too. I wonder if there's another party that we have to consider what their policies are.
Let me just say the Greens have gone leaps and bounds by their ability to... You know, do very little. They do quite a bit, but just in respect to the fact that they're going to win by default because people won't vote for other parties. Anyway,
well, they're not a single issue party anymore, and they do oppose the net filter, which is a good thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron's in this evening. JD and Graham all sitting here talking about politics. I guess one thing we should talk about too is the fact that Conroy has sort of carrying on a little bit about the internet
Federal
filter.
Communications Minister.
Yes. The broadband filter, as you just alluded to, is something which is, I guess, a concern to a lot of people who understand the technology. and the technology is there. Well, really what we're doing is protecting, or from the government's point of view, protecting the kids by saying, no, you can't look at these images online.
That's the line they run. But you've got to consider that every single technologically knowledgeable person, anybody who knows anything about how networks and the internet work, is going to tell you that this is a bad, 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 bad idea. And you've got to wonder, they can't all be pedophiles.
Correct. Now, listening on the radio this morning to Mr. Conroy talking to, I think, John Fain on ABC Radio, he's starting to get this scaremongering campaign going. It's the fear that they're trying to instill into people. You know, I think even, not wanting to turn the show into a political thing too, but even from his boss's point of view, they're now sort of trying to put fear into people. And people become afraid of things they don't understand.
Absolutely, yes.
It's like skeletons in the closet and little kids with shadows and stuff like that. They don't understand it. So as a result, they become scared. And I think they're trying to do that with the general population and pull the wool over their eyes.
Yes.
So,
but I think as we've heard from some of our guests in the past, if the true issue is around education and knowledge, then by dressing up the broadband filter as something that's going to protect children, parents like ourselves and others that are maybe even older and perhaps not as technologically aware as their kids are going to think, everything's fine, I don't need to monitor them because there's the big net filter protecting them, which is just not true because the kids will get around it pretty quick, as we've seen already.
They don't even need to get around it. The net filter, as proposed by the current federal government, the communications minister, does not block ordinary pornography. It does not. It's not emails
and other things.
No, even on websites, it doesn't block ordinary porn websites. It only blocks stuff that's refused classification.
Ordinary pornography is not refused classification.
That's right.
It has an R-plus rating.
We have R and X ratings in Australia that are not refused classification, and that ordinary material is freely available.
And you don't
want your kids looking at that stuff.
And I don't even think that message is well understood either, Graham.
It's not at all understood, and that's got to get out.
One of the issues in our household...
Tell everybody you know, please.
...is YouTube. I have young girls,
yes,
and they love playing with technology like iPads and iPhones. Now, one of the great things that my little five-year-old likes doing is watching those stupid little cartoon things that pop up on YouTube from time to time. Now, I don't say there's a problem with that, but what I have a problem with is the fact that she can accidentally go, oh, that's a cute kitten or a cute puppy, and then they look at a video which may be... So, for example, the demise of a said cute kitten, and that is devastating for young kids. So, as a result, you know,
YouTube's not too bad for that. YouTube's fairly well regulated to keep the nasty content off. There is no pornography on YouTube.
No.
It doesn't last more than 5 minutes if there is. There's no death videos and nasty stuff like that on YouTube.
Stuff there that you don't want kids to look at, which is very much of a, you know, that sort of relationship. But anyway, the good thing about it, the positive side of this, is I know that in the iPad you can actually go into your settings and turn off you can turn off individual icons which come as default with the iPad, and I believe YouTube is one of those because I've done it.
Very good.
Which is a very handy thing. But once again, getting back to our initial about internet censorship and stuff like that, your parents need to know about this. It's not the kids, it's the parents that need to do that.
Understand how it all works, yeah.
And if you do that before you give them the iPad, then they won't even know it's gone.
Well, there's a point. The other thing I have to say, though, and I know I'm not a parent, and I know that being a parent is very hard, but the internet is the world. The internet is representative of the world as a whole. If you wouldn't let your kids go out into the city at night on their own, then don't let them get on the web on their own.
Correct. You wouldn't let your kids on a train at night, would you?
Well, the way things are going in Melbourne at the moment, you wouldn't go on a train yourself in the daytime.
Correct. But there you go, and you wouldn't, and that's what I mean. That's what you have this self of, you have this awareness of where you should and shouldn't go, and the same applies for the net. Don't let people go to the dark side.
It's representative of the world. There's bad stuff out there along with the good. If you wouldn't let your kids go out into the city on their own, then you don't let them out on the internet on their own. You sit with them and stay with them when they're online.
Communications Minister Stephen Conroy has lashed out at the opposition to the federal government's bid to filter the internet and labelled those promoting the dissent as dishonest. He described claims that the internet speeds would be slowed as much as 87% were wild and said that the government's intentions were misrepresented by opponents. So that was
the government's intention is to be re-elected, and if anyone claims that that's a misrepresentation of what the government's trying to do, then yep, they can have a go at me.
Zuckerberg, you know him, don't you? Privacy. Zuckerberg. privacy advocates privacy, know him very well.
I thought you were going to say privacy advocate Mr. Zuckerberg said.
No. They're fully aware of who he is. For those of you who don't know, Mr. Zuckerberg is the man who is behind Facebook.
The founder of FaceSpace.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people criticise me for saying that I don't understand Facebook. Well, I still maintain the fact that Facebook is evil. So, come on, bring it on. During the course of the week, Facebook chief executive Mark Zuckerberg has attempted to defend the social networking site's privacy policy in an interview with All Things Digital, which is a very well-respected publication.
I like the word attempted.
Zuckerberg admitted to doing stupid things at college, referring to an instant messaging exchange between Zuckerberg and friends while at Harvard. The recently undiscovered message suggests that users were, let's tone this word down a little bit, let's just say dumb.
We're dumb.
Yeah. To trust him with their personal data. So, anyway, however, the 26-year-old billionaire claimed that things have changed since his earlier years, and he now aims to make people feel in control of their information, although he failed to put forward a good argument to prove his case.
I think we understand where he came from originally, and people don't change that much.
But privacy is a concern on those sort of things, and I think the scary part of it is the internet is not like a on-off device. If you put something up there, it gets indexed and stored and cached and lives forever.
Never put something on the internet you don't want someone to ever, ever find.
Correct.
Or say it in an email or a text message.
Mm. Really?
They don't disappear, no.
Text messages? Mm. In other news, Google is going to hand over that Wi-Fi data that got into all sorts of strife the other day. See, that was the other thing.
Now, that's a number of countries, because I read about this in Australia. Conroy's doing it, but they're doing it in other countries as well. It's
Germany's
having
a go at them, I think. Yeah.
Once again, I wonder if Germany's got an election coming up too, because this is just storm in a teacup sort of scenario.
Germany's got laws, remember. They're now prosecuting people for open networks.
That's right, they are. We talked about that a couple of weeks back. But if you think about the fact that if someone just drove past your place and you're on the phone or having a chat, chances are you'd need to go and buy, just like winning three lots of Tats Lotto in a row. I would have thought that's a gambling sort of, what do you call it? A game
lottery.
Of chance.
Lottery.
There you go. You'd have to win three of those in a row. That's my interpretation of it. That by the time someone had picked something out of an unlocked network driving past. So it's very much a storm in a teacup. Yet our Mr. Conroy has got up there and made a big song and dance over it. And a lot of people are now speculating about the fact that, well, maybe he's got his nose out of joint with Google about the internet filter. So, which he obviously denies, but, you know, you've got to bear that in mind. Also, it's an election year and, lots of things that 1 and 2 plus 3 equals 10.
Oh, yes, attacking internet companies over that sort of stuff, yeah, got to be a vote winner.
Absolutely. Anyway, Google has confirmed that the data on the private Wi-Fi connections, which was collected by mistake, will be handed over to European regulators within the next 2 days. The search giant raised serious privacy concerns after legacy code designed to sample all categories of public broadcast Wi-Fi data found its way into the company's Street View cars, angering watchdogs all around the world. So
we would never have known about this unless Google fessed up.
Well, this is exactly right. Eric Schmidt did the right thing.
Eric Schmidt's done the right thing. He's being open and transparent about what's happened. He said, look, this was a mistake. We've admitted that it was inadvertent and we didn't intend to capture this data and B, store it. We have discovered that this is what's happened. We're telling everybody about it, and this is what we're going to do to fix the problem. But had he just stayed stum and no one knew, then that would be a completely different story if it had been somebody else inadvertently had stumbled across Google's collection of this data. But
is Google this the same data that we were talking about the other day where Graham, for example, who doesn't have an XG card or a GPS in his laptop, suddenly comes up on Google Maps in latitude?
I think what's happened, Justin, is that they've intended to collect just enough information to do that, and they've inadvertently collected a lot more information as well. So instead of just collecting the MAC address and the SSID and matching it to the location, they've also sampled the actual data on the network.
They've found a hotspot called Justin's Home Network.
Right, so it's not just finding the network. They've actually taken some data off the network.
Oh, look, they've
recorded some data that was being broadcast at the time.
Yeah, which might include Justin pressing send receive on his email client and in plain text, because that's the nature of the language of what we call POP3 for collecting mail. We can see your username, we can see your password, and we can see part of a mail message coming down to your computer.
Just what Google need. JD, can you bring some milk home on the way from the radio show tonight, please? Yeah, good.
But you've got to bear in mind, though, that Google could only have collected it if it's being sent unencrypted.
Yes.
This is there was talk about charging Google under the for intercepting telecommunications under the Communications Act. for intercepting a communications, you know, signal, whatever. I don't know what. Yeah, the
and during the week,
is.
It was reported that Mr. Conroy referred this to the Australian Federal Police there for investigation to see if there was any breach of that legislation.
Now, this is like charging somebody for intercepting a phone call because they overheard someone yelling on their mobile phone on a tram.
Oh, sorry about that. That was me.
But you see what I mean? You've chosen to broadcast your conversation just through carelessness, just by being on the phone in a public place and yelling. In this other case, people have broadcast by setting up a network without putting any locks on it. It's like leaving your front door off, not just open, but off.
Just today, the Australian Federal Police have confirmed an investigation into search engine giant Google for possible unauthorised access of electronic communications following a recent recommendation by the Federal Attorney General. AFP High Tech Crime Centre Assistant Commissioner Neil Gorn, if that's how you pronounce his name, said he had received a request from the Attorney General last Friday to investigate the search engine company. Now, this sort of the Privacy Commissioner here in Australia, I think when this first hit the airwaves, she really brushed it off, said, oh, yeah, it's maybe cause for concern. But anyway, I think this is a result of what's going on in the political space at the moment, which is why all this sort of stuff's come to the forefront. Let's turn Google into a better... We've been a bit negative tonight and a bit political. Let's go and...
Well, I've been trying to defend them.
Well, yeah, good. That's very good. Google sets to release Chrome OS. Now, is this going to give everyone a run for their money? But no. Chrome OS in probably the American late fall, which is probably our November, December over here. So... we're going to see a new operating system which we can boot up on our devices, desktop devices, I guess.
I think Google's intention has always been to have Android as the operating system for the small screen devices, like your PDAs and smartphones, and to introduce Chrome operating system for the slightly larger screens, like the netbooks.
This is going to have a go at Windows. This is a Microsoft competition coming along here.
It'll be targeting Windows. It'll be competing with Windows.
The Chrome system will be designed initially to work on laptop PCs, as you just said there, Dr. Ron. But obviously, it can go further, if you think about it. Google is seeking to challenge the dominance of Microsoft Windows operating system, which currently runs on more than 90% of all personal computers currently.
The thing is, it doesn't really do the same thing as Windows does.
No, it doesn't.
It's like having an operating system that's really just a big fancy web browser.
And that's all Chrome really is. It's a web browser.
The Chrome operating system will be a support system for a web browser. So you'll have limited ability to save things locally or to access your...
You won't have a local mail client, for example. You'd be checking your mail in the cloud and stuff like that.
On
and
Gmail, that's how it's going to work. It'll all be based around... okay, what do I need on my netbook? What I want my netbook for is to get on the internet, and that's all it'll do.
But don't forget that Apple were trying, and I don't know where they are at the moment, with their iWork series to run that in the cloud, and Office has got a .NET version as well in the cloud, and there's the Microsoft Mesh, which is their cloud environment. So everyone's had a bit of a dabble in there. We may even find some more tomorrow morning with the
We're going to be in trouble if it rains, won't we? Gee whiz.
But that's where everyone's going. So it is direct competition for Windows. But wearing my Apple hat, that's probably only because on the laptop and desktop environment, that's where Windows is the dominant player. If you're looking at the tablets, eventually this is going to be competing with the iPad, you would think, and any other tablet device that comes out.
All right, whilst we're talking about all things, I guess it was the Australian Federal Police, they're demanding, the AFP demands Facebook offer a one-click police alarm. I don't know whether any of you heard about this in the news today, but Facebook could have a local police point of presence within months, according to the Australian Federal Police. This is Mr. Gorn. He's been very busy today. Not only is he having a go at Google, but Facebook as well. The move would eliminate a sticking point in a high-profile slanging match between the two organisations after the AFP questioned Facebook's willingness to cooperate with the local police investigations. So, what do you reckon? A little button? I can't see that really
kicking
in or working or anything like that, but at least they're trying, I guess.
What do you push the button for?
Well, obviously, if you come across someone who's, I don't know, doing unsavory online or something, you can alert the authorities to that particular person, maybe.
What are they going to do with the hundreds of thousands of button clicks that happen every hour?
You reckon it's that much? That's a lot of
obviously the federal police have obviously got a lot of spare people and a lot of spare time on their hands.
No, I can't see it. Yes, good in theory, but no, just think about it a little bit. No.
Good idea, whoever that was.
They have, those sorts of sites like Facebook and eBay, YouTube. They have links now where you, it says report abuse or report this content if something is bothering you or troubling you. If you think it's illegal or it's offensive or whatever, and then the operators of the site can look at it, make an assessment. If they think that something criminal is going on, then they can report it to the police. But for there to be a link there on each site or each Facebook page, it's...
Was that the intention, or was it another method of using the internet to alert authorities about a potential emergency? Was it really about reporting?
I think it's purely speculative in a wish list type sort of thing.
It's a reporting system, yeah. I think is what they're talking about.
Yeah. Mm.
And again, it's only one product of several. You know, there's other products out there that match Facebook, probably not quite as big, but there are others around. So by addressing it in one platform, you're still leaving the rest of the internet open.
Well, that's it. You've got to look at MySpace, you've got to look at YouTube, you've got to look at Twitter, you've got to look at everything. Everything like that.
Maybe we could legislate so that web browsers have a police button built into
them. That's a good idea. Yeah,
so that the Australian web browser, that one would be.
Well, yes, it would have to. Well, would go along with the localisation, wouldn't it? You spell colour correctly, and you get an Australian police button.
Oh, that'd be a good idea. And the Macquarie Dictionary. Yeah,
that's right.
We'll have it set up a VoIP circuit through to Mr. Conroy's mobile, and he can.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, he'll be able to help us.
One of those.
Yeah.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. After the break, we're going to come back with the wonderful Mr. Adam Turner, who is going to be talking about...
He's back in his digital lounge room.
Back in the lounge room to talk about TVs and things like that. So chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Come and say good day while we're in the break.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
And there's an LED backlight as well.
It's a humdinger. Rip Schneider.
It's a Perlaterra.
Are they selling on eBay?
Oh, yes.
Ah.
Not that type of guy.
You sound disappointed, Graham.
Entertaining.
Now, I'd like to introduce a conspiracy theory at this point in time because...
Oh, good.
Informative.
We've got another case here of a complete and utter lack of perspective.
Independent.
No, the couch is unbleepable.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, you're right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Adam Turner is one of our regular contributors to the show, as you're no doubt aware. Now, he lives in the digital living room. He likes connecting things up and playing things and stuff like that. He also likes watching the odd television show, and he's a bit of a wordsmith, as you're probably no doubt aware. Before I go to his piece this evening, I'd just like to do a little bit of a straw poll here in the studio and find out what you guys watch on television. And I mean free-to-air television, I don't mean DVDs. Do you watch any shows? Are there any shows that you think, oh, I better record on my PVR on a religious occasion?
All the time.
All the time, yeah. Do you get into serials, or are you very much a watcher of one-offs? You know, be it the news, whether you make it or not one night, doesn't matter. Do you watch a one-off special because you came across it? Or I don't know. What are your viewing habits?
I do tend to get hooked in by the serial format, but I haven't been lately. And when I do, I find that the networks treat you with such contempt in serials that, they'll just change the time one week and you'll miss an episode and so on. So you have to watch them by downloading, not by watching them off air.
But that's where a PVR with a EPG, an electronic program guide, can come in handy, because...
Well, it would if the program started at the time that the program guide said they do.
They never do.
But
you always miss either the beginning or the end.
Oh, I add half an hour to the beginning and an hour to the end, I'm guaranteed of getting it one way or the other.
Well, that's true, but when you actually click the button that says program XYZ on channel whatever...
Yep.
It doesn't... You always miss a bit.
And then channel whatever decide that, oh, well, we've got some special on, so we'll put it on an hour late, and don't tell the program guide.
Yeah.
Or the footy show runs an hour and a half over time.
An hour and a half over time?
It's been known to.
That's like Hey Hey It's Saturday. Dickerous. Used to. Yeah.
Yes.
We're addicted to NCIS in our household.
That's a Sunday night thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, there's a few nights
NCIS
a week.
NCIS Los Angeles.
But can you miss a week and not get too upset about it? It's not like a serial where...
No, it's a serial. If we miss it, then there's hell to pay.
Yes, really? That would be an absolute disaster. I can imagine that.
Is it a serial? I thought it was just a one thing, but obviously not.
No, each week has its own story, but there is an underlying story which develops over the course of the season.
I see.
You have to watch it.
So that's your viewing habit. Is that the only show you would watch?
My wife's become addicted to Glee. She thinks that's very fun. I've watched a couple of episodes. It's quite funny, actually. It's quite entertaining.
Yeah?
And
but is that another episode where if you miss a week, it's not an issue? Or do you, once you're hooked, you've got to watch?
No, once you're hooked, you're hooked. Okay. There have been serials which I've tried to watch and I can't get into. I watch 3 or 4 or 5 episodes and I think, no, I'm wasting my life here. This is not worth watching. Dollhouse is one. I tried to watch that and I couldn't get into it.
Couldn't get into Dollhouse?
No, I couldn't.
Never mind.
No, but I'm like Graham. I get hooked on the whole serial unfolding week-to-week caper. Can't help myself.
But then that works against the free-to-air, though. You end up BitTorrenting and unplugging your antenna.
Well, especially if you miss an episode.
Yeah.
You think, well, I've already invested... two seasons of this program and I'm up to episode 5 or 6 or 7 in the new season and I miss a week, what option have I got?
That's right.
Well, you might find that Channel 7 have got their new catch-up series, website on Yahoo where you can probably watch something that's gone to air recently, but they probably run what they've run to air. So if they've edited any parts of it, you'll get the edited bits up on their website. The ABC's fantastic.
Oh, and couldn't I have... strung up somebody at Channel 7 for editing Buffy when they were showing it.
Oh, really?
Oh.
See, there you go. They just take slabs out. And, of course, the person who's editing it, and I know this because I used to do it for Channel 9 when I used to work for Channel 9, used to say, okay, we've got a movie that runs 4 or 5 minutes longer than the slot allocated. Can you just nip a bit out?
Find 5 minutes and get rid of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So and it's
and the person that edits it doesn't know the show, so correct. They don't know that the bit they're lifting out is the vital bit that correct. you've waited 3 years to find.
That's the bit, or it's a soppy bit, and you go, oh, who wants to see that? And you take it out, and the next thing you know, that's the pivotal part, and the girls like it.
Or like they do in all the comedy, the reruns of all the old comedies, the Get Smarts and the Hogan's Heroes and those ones, they come out, they fade to black to the ad early and cut off the punchline.
Ah, yes. It's just trim 5 seconds here because the newsreader ran over and the news break. That happens.
That happens.
I'm just having a look in the chat at the moment. Big Bang Theory, Doctor Who.
Doctor Who, absolutely. Who. Yep.
Doc Martin and NCIS are 4 that they're chatting about there at the moment.
Yeah, Swanee says CSI, which is long gone, but yeah, all the CSI
programs. It lost me a while back.
No, it's being replayed on Go.
Oh, is it? There you go.
Everything gets replayed on Go.
Which is Channel 9's.
And Hogan's Heroes you mentioned earlier, that's there as well.
And the Flintstones and the Roadrunner and all that sort of stuff. We're working our way back. We're in the 60s at the moment.
Now, what was really disappointing is I've been downloading some stuff off iView to catch up. And it's an old series, but Brideshead Revisited. I'm a bit of a romantic at heart. And they got up to episode 3.
Sweet?
And that was he's the it. One. No episode 4, 5, 6. That stopped.
Really?
What, I'm devastated. Mid-season, they just stopped it, did they?
So what's that about?
No wonder why
people... Is that a British series?
It is.
I think it was, yeah.
I'll hook you up.
I didn't know you were a romantic either, okay, Graham.
No, but I've got a really good place for downloading UK stuff.
Graham peddling his black market wares.
But the other things that we tend to record was Hungry Beast when it was on, and Gruen Transfer's coming back.
Yeah, Gruen, that is coming back.
But iView's so good for those. You don't have to watch them on air. You watch them on iView.
Oh, absolutely. Now, yeah.
Can I just say that somebody in this room put me onto a good little flash plug, plug-in
for Firefox.
For iView. Which is really good because traditionally it streams to your living room TV or whatever when you click it and you have to watch it there and then. But this actually just turns into a file and downloads
it. Brilliant.
So every 2 weeks you go through and go, what have I missed? Which is the habit I've got into now.
Yep.
Oh, I want to watch. There's a great series, I think it's on ABC2, called Video Killed the Radio Star.
Yes.
And being an 80s person, as you probably listen to this program, you might work that out. There's some really great stuff on there and all the music directors, video clip directors of that time. It's great. You just click and download and go and watch on... Because I then download and actually use Air Video and watch it on the iPad.
Yeah. And of course,
rather than watch it on the telly. Sometimes I just go to bed and I'll just get the iPad and I'll watch one of these things streamed to my iPad. It's fantastic.
And we plug iView a fair bit, but it's a great product that the ABC have got. And there's a search function. So for my beloved Brideshead, you can actually search on it and it will come up with every episode that they've got currently on their system as well.
Mm, they need to have a back catalogue. But I don't think their royalties or their rights
would allow
them to do that. But anyway, now it's interesting seeing viewing habits. Obviously, a lot of people out there still rely on free-to-air television for their fix of their ongoing soapy series, sci-fi, whatever it is like that. And if you can't get it, you get awfully disappointed. And then when the newsreader does go over by 30 seconds and have to bail out of a segment early or something, you may miss a vital piece of information. Adam Turner has a view on this, and this is the subject from the couch this week. So, yes, get ready for it.
After 6 years lost on the island, where do we go now? First up, a spoiler alert. Now the final episode of Lost has screened on Australian television, I think it's safe to talk about what happened, but if you don't want to know the score, look away now. It felt strange to wake up in a world without Lost. My household has dedicated 6 years to J.J. Abrams' epic drama, during which time we've changed jobs, moved house, made new friends, laid others to rest, and even welcomed a new baby into the world. Just like the castaways, we're different people to who we were 6 years ago. A friend has known his fiancée for 6 years and is jokingly wondering aloud if their relationship can survive now that Lost has come to an end. In my house, we've always been fans of TV shows with long story arcs. The X-Files, Babylon 5, Battlestar Galactica, 24, The Sopranos, and even sections of the Star Trek series. As someone who appreciates the craft of writing and storytelling, I don't like saccharine TV shows which tie up everything in nice 42-minute bundles. I prefer something with a little more depth, and they don't come much deeper than Lost. To be honest, we don't watch a lot of television in my home these days, partly because we've got two young children, partly because we couldn't commit to another show until Lost was resolved. With this six-year relationship drawing to a close, I think we need to take some time out before we start seeing other shows. We'll continue to flirt with the Big Bang Theory and the IT crowd, but it will be a while before we're ready to commit to another serious viewing relationship. The Lost finale screened in simulcast in 8 countries, but Australia's 7 network decided that we could wait another 48 hours to learn the fate of the survivors of Oceanic Flight 815. Of course, once an episode screens in the US, it quickly becomes available online via BitTorrent, so Australians needed to decide whether they were going to hold out until Wednesday night or download it earlier. It seems many opted for the latter. The Lost finale quickly broke BitTorrent records as the most downloaded show ever, with the final episode downloaded more than 1 million times in the first 24 hours. Australians reportedly led the way, which isn't a surprise when you consider how badly Australian networks treat their viewers. I watched most seasons of Lost on the BitTorrent channel, but as an experiment, I decided to watch the final series on my TiVo. Thankfully, 7 refrained from screwing with the schedule, probably because it screened on the 7.2, the digital-only channel. From what I could tell, viewers on 7.1 still got screwed around. What 7 and the other networks don't seem to appreciate is that most people don't download shows like Lost because they're impatient. They download them because the networks make them unwatchable on free-to-air television. The programmers love to tinker with the schedule, run shows late, run promos over the top, cram in a ton of ads, and generally do everything they can to annoy loyal viewers. At least if you download Lost from BitTorrent, you know you won't miss an episode. Plus, there's no risk of a stupid network promo spoiling the next episode. After watching the finale of Lost on 7.1, time shifted so I could fast forward the ads, I felt strangely satisfied even though I wasn't sure why. The writers managed to create a real sense of resolution, helped by the many tearful reunions that tore at the heartstrings. Even though many questions remained unanswered, I still felt more satisfied than I did at the end of other mythical story arcs such as Babylon 5. With Lost, J.J. Abrams and co. managed to construct a happy ending without quite resorting to the "it was all a dream" cliche, although some might argue it came close with the use of a parallel world. Many viewers were also confused by the scenes of the abandoned wreckage of Oceanic 815, shown with the final credits, as they implied that everyone died in the original crash, especially as Jack had returned to the bamboo grove in the final scenes. For a long time, people had suspected that everyone died in the initial crash and the entire series was set in some kind of limbo world. Now, in the US, ABC was forced to issue a statement to clarify that these images of the wreckage were not part of the story. They were added to soften the transition from the moving end of the series to the 11 p.m. news. It reminds me of the death of Adric at the end of the Doctor Who episode Earthshock, when no music was played over the final credits. That was more than 25 years ago, but the use of silence was so powerful that I still remember it. Of course, Australians who watched Lost on 7.1 didn't see these scenes of the wreckage in the final credits, because 7 played a promo for the Pacific over the top. Once again, 7's contempt for viewers knows no bounds. When we're finally ready to settle down with a new story arc drama, I doubt very much we'll watch it on free-to-air television in my house. So, what did it all mean now that we've come to the end? The writers of Lost didn't lay all their cards on the table, although I don't think anyone seriously expected them to go down a checklist and answer every question. I think all the major questions were resolved. The key really lies in Jack's final conversation with his father in the church. "Everyone dies sometimes, kiddo. Some of them before you, some of them long after you," said Christian. "There's no now here." Think of here, the parallel world, as a form of limbo or purgatory, and the story starts to make sense. Of course, this flies in the face of the idea that detonating the bomb at the end of the last series created a parallel timeline. And once you take that out, that opens up a whole new set of questions. And we could sit here all day and argue about the questions that were and weren't answered in the show. But it's time to move on, accepting that, just as with life, there are some things we'll never quite understand. After 6 years, I think many of us will feel a little lost without Lost, but given time, one day we'll be ready to love again.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there.
Seven's contempt for viewers knows no bounds.
Hear, hear.
Well, it is. It's a bit like that. And, you know, anyone who's ever spent their life working on things and have their name squashed up to 2 pixels high as it rolls through the screen at 3,000% speed up for a credit of something is just, yes, it is contempt.
The thing, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, the things, they dreadful things they do.
It pushes people to use peer-to-peer, really. There's no ifs, no buts about it. People go, oh, I'd rather watch this intact. I must admit, Doctor Who was mentioned, I think, on the chat before. The current series of Doctor Who, like, I'm a Doctor Who fan, like a lot of people are who listen to this show, is being shot, recorded, and produced in high definition.
Yes.
It's currently not showing really in high definition on television here in Australia, so I thought, well, rather than spoil it, I'll wait for it to come out on Blu-ray, and I'll get the Blu-ray and watch the whole series in HD.
I'll chuck it some MKVs later on, too.
Oh, you've downloaded... Oh, okay, good. I'd like to send a cheerio to all the law enforcement agencies listening to us.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm only kidding. No, please.
TikTok Radio encourages responsible file sharing and distribution of copyright material.
Correct. I'll chuck you the MKVs, but do buy the Blu-ray when it comes out anyway.
Have you got the Hurt Locker? No. Anyway. Okay, let's moving right along.
Didn't you hear my news story tonight?
I did, that's why.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yes. If you've bought an iPad, iPhone thing, you probably would have noticed by now that Flash doesn't really work on it. A group of developers...
doesn't really work on it.
We hadn't noticed, no.
Completely fails to even come close to working.
Have I got some news for you, boys?
Doesn't even try to work.
If you've gone within any spitting distance of a Tech Talk show for the last few weeks, you'll have known that too.
A group of developers claim to have designed a tool that automatically converts Adobe Flash files to JavaScript or HTML5 so that they can be viewed on Apple's iPad and iPhones. Apple has chosen not to enable Flash on its popular handheld devices, accusing Adobe's multimedia presentation standard of being a resource hog, which it sort of is, really. It's another layer between the OS and the end user.
So what's the solution? Another layer.
And yes, exactly.
Between Flash and the end user.
At least this will let you watch Flash, potentially. I haven't tried this yet or anything like that. A new open source tool from a mobile advertisement group, RevShock, that allows a developer just to adjust their interactive and animated Flash-based advertisements to automatically be viewable on Apple's iPad or iPhone. So they've been trialing it in the advertising.
Now, Adobe actually had this as well. But there was something about, from what I recall, Warlock on the chat might be able to correct me, there was something about the licensing arrangements in the App Store that prevented Adobe as a supplier being able to package their development tools to enable sites to have a Flash and an iPad, iPhone version concurrently. So there's something about the licensing arrangements preventing it. So this group may well have the same issue, and they might have to put it out in the jailbreak world.
Well, I'm sure that's probably on the cards, really, isn't it? You get absolutely everything in the jailbreak. I don't know anyone who's jailbroken an iPad yet. I haven't done mine. I don't know. Do you know anyone?
Well, I haven't got
an
iPad.
I know you can use any of the current breaking things to actually do it, but
yeah.
At the moment, I see no reason to do so. everything you want to use on your iPad is just good from the App Store at the moment. I'm running two accounts, by the way. That's tricky. Have you tried doing that?
No.
Ever run an Australian, get apps off the Australian store and apps off the US store and try and run them concurrently?
Doesn't work all that well, does it?
No. Just be wary if you go down that path.
Now, you've jailbroken your iPhone.
Absolutely. That's how I'm on the net tonight.
Why is it that you had to jailbreak your iPhone, but there's no need for you to jailbreak your iPad?
Well, basically because I'm using the iPhone as a tethering device.
And that's not supported by Apple?
No. Okay. Oh, no. Okay. So in order to actually use any, like any of you guys in here can connect to the internet through my iPhone sitting on the bench here.
Oh, which thanks is very much.
Very handy thing, and use my mobile broadband package up. So just as well you don't know my login. So, yes.
What's a password? Ask me for a password.
The password is TGC was here.
All these in jokes. People will switch off.
Oh, absolutely. So, yes, there you go. There could be an open source workaround very shortly coming up on a website, which will enable you to use or to see Flash built in. And obviously, there's a big interest for advertisers to do that because a lot of the advertising on the web these days is Flash, those silly things that annoy you when you go to certain websites to read news articles and things bounce in front of you and jump all over the screen. Chances are that's a bit of Flash.
Jamie G in our chat room says HTML5 has a long way to go and currently is twice as slow as Flash doing the same thing.
Absolutely.
Has HTML5 been ratified? Is it?
Yeah.
It has? It's been signed off?
As far as it has been, yes. It's been through WC3.
Mm.
And the code's there. It's just a matter of getting it to actually work. And, of course, the other thing, too, when you move to a new web standard or open up a new possibility of options, people are running IE6. We'll feel yet another nail in the coffin because it just won't work. It won't know how to handle those new lines of code that come out. Whereas, at least with IE8 and the new IE9, which Microsoft's hedging its bets on, and Chrome browsers and things like that, it got half a chance.
And potentially Safari 5 in the morning.
Mentioning IE6, can I tell you a little story?
Oh, do tell.
You know it's coming. I went with somebody the other day on the weekend to buy a mobile broadband USB device. Yeah, they just want broadband for their laptop while they're travelling. So I went to the Telstra shop and
name names.
Bailed up a... I've done it now. I went to the local mobile phone shop.
Yes.
The one with the big T on the front. And
T-Life.
Bailed up... Yeah, that's exactly the one. Yeah, down the big shopping centre down the road here. Bailed up one of the sales staff and started asking awkward questions. And asked a couple of questions he didn't know the answers to. That's fair enough. They can't be expected to know everything off the top of their heads. So we went over to one of their big... They've got these big screens all down the side of the shop. They're like 24, 26-inch touch screens.
Yeah, they flog Foxtel on it.
Yep, they flog everything on it. They're touch screens full of all the details about all their products.
Oh, cool. That would work well. That'd look nice.
That did look nice, except the guy tried to use it by leaning his hand against the screen and then trying to, while he's got two fingers already in contact with the screen, tapping the screen with a third finger. Yeah, well, then they weren't multi-touch things. That didn't work for him at all. So he mucked around with that and didn't have much luck. Once he did get his touchscreen to work, the fancy touchscreen interface didn't have the information we needed. So he said, "Oh, that's all right. We'll get it off the Telstra website." So he flicked a secret switch and up came Windows, and he launched a web browser, which was Internet Explorer 6.
What version of Windows was it?
Windows XP.
Ah,
and went to the Telstra website to look for the information.
Nothing would appear, right?
Clicked on, I don't know, a couple of menu items, you know, internet, mobile broadband, and then he got the choice of... Big Bond internet, and you got the choice of mobile broadband or home broadband or something like that. Clicked on either of those. Oh, I got the choice of prepaid or postpaid. That's right. I'll get my story straight in the end. Prepaid or postpaid. And no matter which one of those two he clicked on, it came up with a 404 error. on the Telstra website.
That's not a browser issue. That's just a
that's just a website design issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you comment really loudly that how could Telstra possibly run a telephone network when it can't even design a website?
Well, the person I was with wasn't a very technical person.
Obviously.
So I was obliged to explain to them what a 404 error was.
Did you do so confidently and in a loud voice?
Yes, certainly
did. Within hearing, certainly. Within hearing of most customers in the store?
Yes, that's right.
Good. Well done, that man.
So, yes.
For people who don't know, a 404 error means the page is not found. It's a fault on the part of the web developer.
It's a link to something that doesn't exist.
Mm.
This isn't here. It's not found. I can't find what you've asked me to give you.
I've also noticed, too, whilst we're talking about the Telstra webpage, if you ever go into it looking for your account information, the only browser to use is IE6. Otherwise, it has no idea how to handle the graphics and puts text on top of text, and you can never read anything.
IE6.
So IE in particular is the browser of choice for if you're going into the back end to do billing stuff on the Telstra side. I know you guys have probably...
Which is a bit hard whilst you're using a Mac, I've got to say.
On the other hand, IE6 is known to be unsafe to use on the internet.
On a Telstra site, absolutely.
It's unsafe to use IE6 to browse the internet. This is one of the points. It's insecure, and there are flaws in it that have not been and will not be patched. So, if you go out browsing the internet with Internet Explorer 6, you are asking. It's like leaving your front door unlocked. You are asking for someone to come and install stuff on your computer without your consent.
Is that why the state government uses it?
Presumably.
We did web development for them, and they've got them all through their... what do they call themselves? It was one of the big projects about migration and stuff like that, which we did recently, and it all had to work in IE6 for no other reason than they couldn't see it inside. They also use Lotus Notes, but that's another story.
Swanee in our
Nothing
chat room
Lotus Notes.
Says he used Internet Explorer last to download Firefox. Good work, Swanee.
Well done, that man. whilst we're talking about Telstra too, just briefly, because the manic minute is coming up very, very quickly. Telstra's going to offer his naked DSL broadband trial. Now, hello.
They're going to offer a naked DSL.
Hello.
They're going to do a trial to see if the technology's viable.
Yeah. This just flies in the face of everything that Telstra has stood for the past 25 years as the internet's come along, saying it'll undermine our base of income. And anyway, I think you alluded to it in the news, Dr. Ron, too, that Big Pond has shocked the broadband market with a surprise trial of naked DSL. But the difference in their service, apparently, is that you can still get to ring 000 and someone. Or you can get, I don't know, something like that.
Well, not really naked.
It's
not really naked, no.
The details aren't clear. We don't know if it's going to be not naked or if it's going to be naked with a very limited cut-down voice over IP service. The product name which they're using is Pure DSL. It's what they're calling it. They're going to offer it on a 24-month contract, which is going to cost about $60 per month for 25 gigabytes worth of downloads. Now, there are a lot of people that are very critical of this, and I mentioned it in the news in terms of that the technology is already established, and they're saying it's going to be a trial. And Telstra are also saying that it's going to be groundbreaking and it's going to be revolutionary.
Really? Which part?
Well, no one knows. But the other thing that everyone's concerned about, and that we probably need to talk about quickly, is that this type of service is resold by Telstra resellers, by your IINets and other people who offer voice over IP. Telstra has never actually, you know, provided this type of product before, and they're going to be competing against people that they're reselling the product. So,
well, that's a good strategy.
This is the problem Telstra has all the way. It tries to be a wholesale provider and a retail provider.
Exactly. It's never tried to do this with naked DSL before, but this is the first time it's tried to do it. So,
although realistically, though, Telstra's costs and Big Pond's costs are usually two or three times as much for much less service delivery. So are they really competing?
Where does the unbundled local loop fee go? That goes probably straight in their skyrocket, I would imagine.
$11. It comes out of one pocket and into another. It's
being counter-central, keeping the accountants busy anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a bit of a laugh during the week. When I saw that come up, I had to put it on the Tech Talk website and one of our little news things there. So.
Look, there's lots of comment and opinion about it. If you have a look around at the common technology blog sites and news sites like IT Wire and ZDNet, all those guys have got lots of opinions and lots of comments about it. So if you're actually going to participate in the trial, then for goodness sake, get in touch with us. Let us know why and how you find it when you're trialing
it. And what mental institution you've recently been released from.
Now that it says it's a trial, does that mean it's a limited period? So you can only sign up for it and in 18 months' time it stops again?
Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks. The trial will last 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
And then if the trial is successful from Telstra's point of view, they'll offer it to the participants of the trial, and they'll put them onto a 2-year contract.
Right.
A 2-year contract?
2-year contract. Yes.
Don't. All right. Microsoft unveils game-changing Windows Phone 7. Now, Microsoft has been lagging. Languishing is probably the word, in a technological backwater, probably since the launch of, I don't know.
In terms of...
Their big spike monetary-wise
was 2000.
In terms of
Windows-based mobile phones.
Well, yeah, but if you have a look at, like last week we reported the fact that Apple has basically taken over the reins of company value or worth of a value. They're now worth $222 billion, and Microsoft is now worth $219 billion. That graph also showed that Microsoft's heyday was back in the beginning of the current millennium, the year 2000, when they went to Windows 2000. And since then, it's been on a slow decline. And they need
and
to...
that's about the time that Apple started seriously...
Correct.
Yeah.
Now,
moving on to gadgets and again, moving away from the PC.
Microsoft really needs to potentially come up with some goods that it's going to sort of like hopefully turn that around a little bit. And they're sort of hedging their bets.
Well, like a Windows phone that works.
Maybe. Anyway, Microsoft has moved from the backseat of the smartphone war to the front and center, unveiling a radically redesigned operating system that will soon become a serious challenger to Apple's iPhone. Now, this is in the Barcelona thing that was on just the other day. At the World Mobile Phone Congress, the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, the company showed off Windows 7 Phone for the first time, which has been designed from the ground up to seamlessly pull together content from social networking sites and other web services on a scale unseen on competing platforms. Now, these are fairly big sort of claims, but...
It is a big claim.
The screenshots have been out for a while with some of their sort of concept and flow diagrams, and it's actually quite interesting. They've moved away from the whole idea of applications and icons to do certain things, and they've centered it more around the information and the data and what you want to do with it next. So if you like the contextual menus that... We used to right-clicking on to say, I want to do this with this icon, as opposed to I want to open Word and write a letter.
So, yeah, so instead of opening Word and then opening and writing a document, you right-click a document and say, I want to edit this.
Yeah, or I want to Facebook it, or I want to do something else with it. So it's a different paradigm in the way you operate your machine. Now, the iPhone was different to how you use a PC because, you know, it was... all about networking and little apps to do lots of different little things. And this is different again. And so it might have a bit of an advantage.
It might find a place in the market. Yeah, you never know. Because Zune was their music player, which they didn't even release here in Australia, but yet it's went relatively well in the United States. So it would be interesting to see how the mobile phone market, which is very Apple-centric at the moment. You walk down the street, everyone's got an iPhone these days. Or should I say the majority of people that I bump into have them in their back pockets and stuff like that.
Still encounter a surprising number of non-iPhone smartphone users. There's a lot of HTC devices out there.
A lot of RIM devices too.
Yep. Oh, yes. that's a whole different disaster area though.
I think
Andrew's referring to the BlackBerrys.
Correct.
Yeah. Most people in the studio here, I think, have used the Windows mobile operating system at some point in time.
The old one.
The old one, yeah. And we've had...
And there's a grab in one of the promos of me saying how bad my experience was with it.
Yeah, well, this is what we're talking about. It's sort of, we've got like the Windows operating system being brought to a mobile telephone. It just doesn't work. Having said that, Adam Turner came into the studio here a few weeks back now, maybe a couple of months ago, and he had, off the top of my head, I think it was an HTC HD 2. I think that was the handset model.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was running Windows Phone 7, what's it called now? Windows Phone. Windows Mobile 7.
Yeah.
And it had a skin. It had an overlay which was sort of hiding that really clunky old Microsoft Windows mobile look and feel. And the phone ran really, really well. It was a very, very fast, responsive user interface, and it looked really usable. And if you didn't know that it was a version of Windows Mobile underneath it, you'd probably say, this is a great HTC handset. It's doing a good job.
But that's the trick with these mobile devices. They've got to be fast and responsive and snappy because you're trying to use them in an environment where you push for time. You're trying to get it to do something quickly.
It needs to be absolutely real time. When you press a button, it needs to respond because that's how we use telephones.
Yeah, I needed to use my iPhone the other day so that I could take a photo and tweet it before a ninja got me.
Got attacked by ninjas. Didn't work.
Anyway, the mobile phone that we're talking about here, which is the new Windows Phone 7, these phones are based around the new operating system and set to be hit the market by around Christmas time. Samsung, HTC, HP, Sony Ericsson, Dell, LG and Toshiba have already signed up as partners. So I guess they've got a few interesting
Well, there's going
manufacturers behind them there. So watch your space for Christmas, I guess.
Windows Phone 7 series. Thank you, Warlock, in the chat room. That's what it's called.
And we know that Microsoft have been doing doing their homework and investigating what people are doing with their phones and doing a lot of research. It must be over 12 months ago now. We had someone from Microsoft's mobile handset research.
Yeah, we should get her back on again. She was good.
Was it Grace Kerrison?
Yeah, I think it was Grace. She was really good. They talked about what people sent on SMSs or something.
So hunt it up in the archives because that research way back then that's led to what's being released now.
We might put a call and see if we can get her back on the show. That'd be good.
That would be good.
Righto, let's briefly talk about, and I say briefly, things we were going to talk about tonight but got totally out of control with.
It's a mad minute. Your time starts now.
Okay, it's about the mad 3 minutes. Zombie PCs to be throttled under a new ISP code. So if you've got a zombie in your network, then potentially the ISPs are going to say, hey, and cut you off.
Fantastic.
Yep, internet service providers should quarantine or even slow down the connections of customers with infected computers. This is according to the Australian Industry Code of Practice.
And provide help to them to clean it up.
Yeah, that's probably the better part of it too, because a lot of people wouldn't really be aware that they had zombies. Experts warn on malicious Twitter spam out in the news today. Security researchers are warning of yet another Twitter-based theme. Malicious spam attack that attempts to install rogue antivirus software on the victim's PC. Once again, keep your antivirus stuff up and running.
I got about 400,000 messages from Twitter in my email box today saying, that I needed to click on something to implement Twitter's new security policy.
That'll be it.
Yeah.
But you're not a Twitter user.
I am, actually, but I'm a very rare Twitter user. But
he never bothers to acknowledge people.
No. Oh, sorry, Justin.
Oh, dear. All right, in other interesting news, supercomputers to simulate life on Earth. Why on Earth they'd want to do that, but nonetheless, a Switzerland company.
There's no life down here.
No.
I thought there was a big simulator just outside there.
Absolutely. They've moved from, what was that game, that massive online game?
GetAFirstLife.com.
That's the one. Yeah. Switzerland's Brutus supercomputer and several others at the Los Alamos National Laboratory in the US are part of a scientific attempt to simulate life on Earth in an effort led by the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, also known as ETH Zurich. Researchers hope to explore issues like economic crises and how international conflicts originate. Well, just turn the telly on, I would have thought, but nonetheless, they're going to simulate it.
And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere out in space.
Indeed. Now, Nokia is trying to get back into the marketplace here because obviously Apple, Microsoft and Sony, all the other guys are pushing Nokia out of the marketplace. They've come back with this doozy, and this isn't the odd spot, just so you know. Nokia, the world's top cell phone maker, has unveiled a new cheap models for bicycles, and they're going to charge it by bicycle power.
This is very cool.
Nokia said the 15 euro charger was targeted at developing countries with limited access to electricity, but could catch up on in Europe where cycling to and from work is common.
We had an odd spot a few months back where inmates in a prison in the United States had to cycle for their television.
Well, this is not unlike you cycle for your phone calls.
An hour of cycling equaled an hour of television viewing.
They didn't actually power the TV. Now, that'd be an incentive.
No, this is really cool. This is it's a good old fashioned bicycle dynamo like you used to use to keep your headlight on.
I remember those. Before the advent of LEDs and batteries.
That's right, and you just use that. It comes with a dynamo to rest against the wheel.
Yeah.
And a cradle to put the phone in, and it charges the phone while you ride along. It's a fantastic idea for particularly for countries where there's not a lot of power around, and you can charge up your phone.
The charger, the first of its kind from a mobile phone company, would replenish the flat battery in just over 2 hours of cycling at around 15 kilometres an hour. So there you go.
There's been third-party versions around, but this is the first time a phone company's released one, like a genuine accessory.
Very good. I expect to see them here on our bikes very shortly, especially, in fact, in Mountain View, where they all get around on treadleys at Google, the little blue bikes. Yeah, they should put them on there.
On your bike, son.
Google's launched a cloud calculator, just in case you needed to use a calculator and couldn't do start run calc on your PC. Does Mac have a calculator built in?
Yes, it does.
There you go. See, everyone's got one, but now Google's...
for people who can't add up short columns of small numbers in their heads.
That's it. Calc's now available in the cloud. Video to
Google,
become...
Google itself can do all those things. You know, you can just type in equations into the Google search bar and it gives you the answer.
It's good.
And you can put in conversions. You can put, 31 degrees Celsius in Fahrenheit and it comes out. It tells you. It's
great the way that works. There's all sorts of little hidden gems in the Google search bar. Things like lyrics. Have you searched for lyrics?
I have.
Yeah, if you hear, if you hear something on the radio, you can go lyric colon and type it in, and it comes back with the name of the song and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
They come up with some fun stuff. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio in its last few moments. Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week after this.
Suffering succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
I'm not sure that they're driving competition out of the whole marketplace.
Well, no, they won't take a definitive stance on that either.
You don't win elections, you lose them.
Who's in the limelight for all the wrong reasons is the question.
Oh, look, but it's great. That's outside Australia.
Lots of girls on the floor there doing development.
Flash is available for free, and I can develop on it for free, can I?
No.
Most modern name servers dealt with that without even blinking.
Entertaining.
That's very hard to do when it's...
it really is hard to
simulate it.
Informative.
It's a glorified phone, but it's...
Independent.
That's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
I agree.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
See, there's some things you just got to do on it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, this thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my home.
Not one, but two gadgets. Toshiba's new BDX2500 and BDX2700 Blu-ray disc players. Toshiba, who used to back the HD-DVD format before has now released two new Blu-ray disc players, the BDX2500 and BDX2700 models. One has Wi-Fi, 2700 model has Wi-Fi, enabling playback of streaming content. The 2700 has Wi-Fi. The 2500 requires an optional wireless adapter. If you live in the US of A, consumers are able to watch the latest movies right on the same day that they're released without any additional monthly fee, thanks to Blockbuster On Demand. Also, instant streaming from Netflix enables...
Comcast do that too over there. I saw that.
Do they?
Yeah, you can watch anything when it comes out the cinema on the same day on the pay for view.
Netflix lets you instantly watch tens of thousands of TV episodes and movies.
What about Lost?
Yeah, I'm sure Lost is there. It's just you won't get any new episodes of Lost, that's all. There you go. So have a look at those. They're the dual gadgets, I guess, Andrew,
and the
for this
next
week.
One in the series, the BDX 3000 yet to come, is going to be the 3D version.
Okay, so we're one model release away from the 3D version. But that's our gadget of the week, the BDX 2500 and 2700 Toshiba new Blu-ray displays.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
This week's website is Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O.com.
I've seen this.
Vimeo is a community, it says it's a respectful community, of creative people who are passionate about sharing videos that they make. Vimeo provides the best tools and highest quality video in the universe, it says. It's a video sharing website. It lets you embed videos that you've uploaded into other social network systems like Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, and so on and so forth. Vimeo is a community, it has its own awards, its own categories, its own groups and channels. Membership is absolutely free, but for a premium, you can enjoy five...
What did you say the domain was?
Vimeo, V-I-M for Mike.
You quite often see it embedded into certain web pages and things like that, the Vimeo stuff.
So is there
stuff.
A point of difference between Vimeo and YouTube, for example?
Well, Vimeo is, I suppose, it's designed so that you can easily copy and paste links or Twitter or Facebook like from the Vimeo site.
Okay, so it's got connections into other social networking.
It's got hooks into other social networks, that's right. For a small premium, you can enjoy no banner ads and unlimited high-def uploading. There's that word again, Andrew, unlimited. For all your embedded video requirements, check it out, www.vimeo.com.
But their uploading's probably a little different. Uploading, yeah, because how many times are you going to upload a movie? So, yeah, go for gold.
Yeah, have a look.
There's also another place around, too. If you ever bought Sorensen Squeeze or any of those things, they come built in with publishing software sites as well. You get I think they call it 360, and you can do the same sort of stuff. But, yeah, Vimeo sounds good, and I've seen plenty of those around the place. So, yeah, give it a go, everybody. It's probably a good idea.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much. I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Thanks, GD, for sending in this Odd Spot this week. A 60-kilometre section of the Stuart Highway in South Australia will be closed for 2 hours next Sunday night to allow for the landing of an unmanned Japanese spacecraft.
What?
In the middle of South Australia. The Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency is due to conduct the re-entry of the Hayabusa spacecraft.
The what?
The Hayabusa. spacecraft.
Is that what they saw floating around northwest Western Australia? Sorry, New South Wales the other day.
That was a great conspiracy theory. Yeah, well, that wasn't it. No, this is a different one, Andrew. It's in the Woomera Prohibited Area, and it's going to be between 10 p.m. and midnight local time on Sunday night. The highway will be closed between Cooper Pedy and Glen Dambo. I've been to both Cooper Pedy and Glen Dambo.
Yeah.
Right out in the middle of nowhere.
The mobile service station at the top of the hill there in Cooper Pedy does a mean toasted sandwich.
They do. They do a good steak sandwich. And there's the Glen Dambo Homestead.
Have you stayed underground there? It's good fun. Too.
I didn't stay underground, but I went on a tour of an underground house or something. Yes. Personnel from the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency have already begun arriving in the opal mining town of Cooper Pedy in preparation for the landing. The South Australian Department of Defence has issued a notice that the South Australian Police Service will be closing a section of the Stuart Highway on the night of Sunday the 13th of June. Travellers, take note.
I've got to say, visions of Space Lab re-entry come to mind, but this is really exciting if we become a bit of a spaceport.
Spaceport. Do we get a transport or something like
the Stuart Highway?
Absolutely.
Graham's found it on Wikipedia. Hayabusa.
Yes, I also found the Suzuki Hayabusa, which is a type of motorcycle.
Is it going to land on the where is it? The Stuart Highway as well?
On the Stuart Highway, no. This is the spacecraft, not to be confused with the motorcycle. They're very different things, Graham.
How do you spell it out of curiosity?
Hayabusa. H-A-Y-A-B-U-S-A. Usual spelling.
Hayabusa. Yeah, very good. You have been listening to Dr. Ron, JD, Graham, and myself, Andrew McComb, here on Tech Talk Radio. If you have us in your living room again next week, we'd be most grateful, wherever you're listening to us, around Australia and this wonderful, great planet of ours. It's been great. So until the same time next week, where we'll know what's going on with the WWDC. You're probably listening to this on a podcast and you already know. Maybe send us a line. Tell us what happened. Until the same time next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.